long-haired preachers come out every night, try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked how about something to eat, they will answer with voices so sweet, you will eat by and by in that glorious land above the sky, way up high, work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die. Holy rollers and jumpers come out, and they sing and they clap and they shout. Give your money to Jesus, they say. He will cure all diseases today. And you will eat by and by in that glorious land above the sky, work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die. And the Starvation Army, they play, and they sing, and they clap, and they pray, till they get all your coin on the drum. But they'll tell you when you're on the bum, you will eat by and by in that glorious land above the sky, way up high, work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die. Working men of all countries unite, side by side we for freedom will fight. When this world and its wealth we have gained, to the grafters we'll sing this refrain. You will eat by and by when you've learned how to cook and to fry and bake a pie. Chop some wood, it'll do you good. And you'll eat in the sweet by and by, you wise guy.
This is a Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report special. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
You were just listening to The Preacher and the Slave, Haywire Mac McClintock, an old member of the IWW. And we've been joined by Dr. William Spriggs, who's executive director of the National Urban League Institute for Opportunity and Equality. He is a former president of the National Economics Association, the Organization of Professional Black Economists, and serves on the Black Enterprise Magazine Board of Economists and many other kind of accolades. And we're going to be looking at... Well, actually, I can't help but think of the song we just heard, "You Will Eat By and By," and that glorious, "Are We Going to Live on Hay?" Well, William Spriggs, what we're going to look at now, we are allegedly in a recovery, but it is a jobless recovery. So is the song that we just heard a little bit of where it's at right now?
Most people think of recovery in personal terms, or think of the economy in personal terms. So, yes, if you don't have a job, it doesn't very much seem like a recovery. And I guess to most folks that makes it an oxymoron. But economists normally think of recovery just meaning that demand has returned and that we're producing more goods and people are consuming more goods. And that is taking place. And traditionally that has meant that you have to hire people in order to do that. This recovery, like the previous one in the early part of the 1990s, didn't generate very many jobs. So we have a real puzzle in economics that hasn't been discussed very much. If you look at each of the last four recessions, if you go back to 1980, each time it takes us longer and longer to generate jobs every time we go into one of these recessions. It took us 25 weeks in the 1980s. It took us 31 months to get back the jobs that we lost in the 1990 recession. We lost 2 million jobs this recession, which is not a remarkably deep recession in terms of job loss, but it's been 37 months and we still don't have those 2 million jobs back. So I think we either will have to do with more of these oxymoronic terms, or we're going to have to make policymakers pay a lot more attention to job recovery.
Just like to go into detail a little bit more about who is unemployed, both in terms of, is it spread equally between different ethnic groups? Is it certain job categories? Also the long-term jobless. Who is unemployed?
African-Americans and Hispanics are at sort of a permanent disadvantage in the labor market. So whether we have a recovery or don't have a recovery, the black unemployment rate stays roughly double the white unemployment rate. And generally speaking, the Hispanic labor market has an unemployment rate which is 1.5 times the white unemployment rate. Now, in this recession, there were periods where the black unemployment rate spiked well above twice and where the Hispanic unemployment rate spiked well above 1.5. But generally speaking, this has been a pretty evenly spread out recession. Each region of the country has suffered roughly the same. There was a little delay in the South and in the West in terms of starting to lose jobs. And currently, the modest job growths we've seen in the last 6 months have taken place mostly in the South and in the West. But unlike in 1990, where the recession hit very hard in Massachusetts and in California and in the Midwest, but didn't seem to affect the rest of the country as much. It spread out a little bit more. We paid a lot of attention to jobs lost in manufacturing. This has been a long-term trend of job loss. It got worse during this recession, so manufacturing has gotten a lot of attention because a lot of jobs were lost in manufacturing. But we also lost a lot of jobs in the information industry. A lot of jobs that we thought would be the engine of growth for this decade have gone away. So these include jobs with internet providers, telecommunication jobs. Percentage-wise, we have lost a lot of those jobs. And a lot of the manufacturing jobs disproportionately have been tied to information. Jobs in computer manufacturing, as an example, have been hit very hard. So in terms of industries, it's those high-wage industries of manufacturing and information that have been hit very hard. And then the industries that are generally low-paying have seen some modest job growth take place. Inner cities continue to be hit harder by recessions than the suburbs, so that continues to be the trend. But when it comes to education level, typically in a recession, college graduates weather the recessions very well, and they tend to get their jobs and their unemployment back and their unemployment rates down quickly. But this recession has hit college-educated workers much harder than previous recessions. And in the African-American community, in particular, as an example, college graduates have been very hard hit by this recession. Now, part of that has to do with age. This recession has been very hard on younger workers. And because the younger cohort includes a higher share of college graduates than the older work cohort, that may be part of the reasons why college graduates and the numbers look very hard hit by this recession. The one set of workers who do seem to be doing better are those over age 55. Now, in terms of the long-term unemployed, this is a record-breaking recession. We have never been this far into what was supposed to be a recovery and had people unemployed more than 27 weeks, to be unemployed for a whole half of the year. Close to a third of African Americans, close to a fourth of all American workers, those who are unemployed, have been unemployed for longer than 6 months. We are reaching records in terms of people spinning up their unemployment benefits because in most states you can't get unemployment benefits beyond 6 months. And there was a federal program to allow for extended benefits, but that's been allowed to expire. The last recession we had in the 1990s, we had extended unemployment benefits at the federal level, and we continued that program well into the recovery. That program didn't end in the 1990s until we got all of the jobs back and we started to show real job growth. But we ended this program while we were still in the middle of shedding jobs. So the problem faced by the long-term unemployed in this recovery are far more serious than they have been in any other downturn we have experienced. And the fact that we have more workers who are unemployed for a long period is a huge issue. And this is the first recession where we've had in separate numbers for Asian Americans. And what is very interesting, because we've never seen the numbers before, I don't think anyone knew what the labor market looked like for Asian Americans, but Asian Americans suffered greatly from this recession because disproportionately a lot of them are in the information industries. And their long-term unemployment rates actually spiked higher than either whites or African Americans. They've come back down. But for a long period of this recession, Asian American workers actually suffered worse.
One of the things that it would be interesting to look at now is really the Bush models, the tax cuts, et cetera. What are those models, and what, if any, effect have they had during this period?
You know, the president came in campaigning that he was going to cut taxes before anybody was talking about a recession. The labor market was still expanding. The economy was still expanding in November of 2000. And then he came into office and started selling his tax cuts as trying to recover the economy. And his initial projections were that he could still balance the budget and his stimulus would be enough at that point to get the jobs back. But September 11th intervened and the economy did take a turn for the worse. But by November of 2001, the economy, in technical terms, had recovered. But we continued to lose jobs. We lost well over a million jobs after, quote-unquote, the recovery began. His response in 2001 was, we're going to have more tax cuts, and I'm going to label this a job bill. And his economist told us that, you know, he would get us close to 5 million jobs. And we continued to lose jobs and continued to lose jobs. And then in 2003, his economist told us, we're going to do another tax cut. And if you do this one, then, you know, we're going to be okay. We're actually going to generate 3 million jobs starting last July. And since last July, we've created nowhere near the 3 million that were in their models. So I think all of us ought to feel very nervous because it's the total failure of those models. And it's not fair to pick on the president. These models are generated by his Council of Economic Advisors and kind of reflect a consensus view among economic modelers of what the economy is supposed to do in response to that kind of stimulus. And every time we've gone into recession, the government tries to respond, and economists sort of chunk up the economy into government consumption, business consumption, and what consumers do. And normally during a recession, when the demand has dropped and there's not as much buying going on as we would want, either the government spends more money or the government cuts taxes to give money to consumers so consumers can spend more money. And the president has chosen the route of cutting taxes and giving the money to at least some consumers, if not, you know, a very tiny share of consumers. But he's given a lot of money. And, you know, we typically would model that there should be some response to that. And the amount of stimulus he's put into the economy is about on par with what other presidents have done who have faced recessions. His amount of stimulus is in the middle, but the number of jobs we've lost places this recession in about the middle. But the response in terms of job gain has been nothing, absolutely nothing, because we've lost too many jobs and still haven't gotten them back. So I think all of us ought to be concerned that our very models, what we're using to try and figure out what we should do in response to this downturn, have not generated results. And that means that the economy is worse. It must be worse than what we are being led to understand, because there's no way we could pump that amount of money into the economy and get nothing. And we can all agree, I think, since I think I'm talking to a sympathetic audience, that, you know, that wasn't the right way to structure the stimulus, that you give all the money to a few people. But it still should have done something. And the fact that it did nothing means that the economy is a lot worse off, a lot weaker than what we've been led to believe. And we need to have a lot more concentrated on making it actually recover.
Well, the question really is, how much should we panic? I know you wanted to take it back when we spoke off the air earlier, mm-hmm. to George Bush, the father.
Right.
And the recession. And I think we should look at it in that context and that evolution. And then the question really is, how much should we panic? And I guess, what is to be done?
Well, I think we have to panic. Now, you know, in some ways, what this George Bush inherited was a weaker set of policy tools. And he has not sought to reverse that. And by that, I mean the following. When we had each previous recession, we had what economists call automatic stabilizers. These are the old ugly word entitlements that everybody fought against, at least in one party fought against. So when you went into recession, more people would become eligible for food stamps, more people would become eligible for welfare, more people would become eligible for unemployment insurance. And even without Congress doing anything, because people were entitled to get this money, then the economy would be pumped up. The government was forced to spend and give it to a lot of people, especially the people who didn't have money, and pump the economy up. This is the first recession where we had transformed the old welfare system, and what we have seen is that the caseload has continued to drop in welfare. So we don't have people automatically getting money, families with children getting money to help them out. And we already talked about the problem with the federal unemployment extension, which this president has not done anything to fight to make sure it took place. So again, workers who've lost their jobs are not getting the money put back in. So part of it, I think, is we should just have as a lesson, those programs weren't a safety net for the individual. They weren't designed as safety nets for the individuals. Those programs were put in place during the Great Depression because everyone understood that as a safety net for the economy, not for the individual, but for the economy, we couldn't afford to have people's incomes drop below a certain point. And we had to make sure that we insured society as well as the individual against a downturn. And so by cutting it out, we've hurt ourselves. We're not just hurting the people who need welfare, people who need food stamps or the unemployed. We're hurting ourselves because the economy is not generating jobs for anybody else. So we need those, at minimum, we need those programs back. And because the stimulus isn't working, we have to think, you know, are there too many leakages in the economy now? When people, especially high-income people who have gotten most of these tax cuts, get money, the money leaks out of the system. We have a lot more net imports than we used to. So a lot of the money doesn't come back to the United States. It just floats out. So there's that part of the weakness. And productivity is much higher than it used to be. So what we may need to do is to do the old, you know, John Maynard Keynes thing, hire people to dig ditches. We need to actually create jobs, not wait for leakages and then hope that money will trickle down. But since we know we need jobs, we need to think about responses at the federal level to create jobs. We know we need to rebuild our schools. We know we need better homeland security. We can't possibly inspect all the ports of this nation or the things that come in. We've dragged off a good share of our fire and police forces because they serve in the reserve or the National Guard, and they're off somewhere else at the moment. We know we need to help out those first responders in terms of homeland security. So there are a lot of places we know we need jobs right now, where we need to employ people right now, and we know that there are people who need jobs right now.
Dr. Spriggs, I'm just wondering if this is being reflected in the political debate now in terms of the Kerry campaign and to what extent the National Urban League is preparing initiatives to bring this to these kinds of issues and policies to the prominence that they deserve.
Well, Mark Morial, our president, has called for a job summit, and I think we're going to try and time it for this summer when we do our national conference. We haven't set the exact date for it yet. We've done quarterly jobs reports, and each time we mention to folks we need to have this job summit take place. I've been a little discouraged that the Kerry campaign was a little slow to emphasize jobs, but this last couple of weeks, he's talked about jobs a lot more. And so I hope he continues to keep on that theme because no matter who's the president in January, the problem of this very weak recovery is that there are the 2 million jobs that we've lost, but each month the labor force grows by 150,000 workers. So if you're not generating 150,000 jobs each month, you're digging a bigger hole. All these young workers who are having a hard time getting into the labor market is because we haven't been creating those jobs. So if you add up the jobs that weren't created plus the jobs that we lost, you get a better picture of what's the real deficit we're talking about here. And that's 7 million jobs, not just the 2 million we lost, but the 5 million we did not create, which we normally create in a healthy economy. So we're actually 7 million jobs short. Even if we generated 300,000 jobs a month like we did in March, we're still going to end up millions of jobs short of where the economy should be. And the next president is going to have to address that. And we're under the shadow of the Federal Reserve that has lost its moorings. The Federal Reserve is sending signals that they think the economy is doing well and they can raise interest rates. The one industry that has done well has been the construction industry, because low interest rates have really pushed housing demand and housing construction up. But if they raise the interest rates, the housing market is going to freeze. In some areas, there's the potential that we can have real serious problems, because a lot of people have been borrowing a lot of money against their homes, and we could have a bust in the housing bubble that seems to have happened in a few cities. And that would mean more than just the halt of construction, but some real job losses as people lose equity in their homes and become unable to pay back the debt that they've taken on. So I hope that the Kerry folks will continue to drive home the message of how serious this economic problem is and how serious we have to be about jobs first. And then we can worry about the deficit. I mean, the short-run deficit that Bush is running now isn't the problem. The problem with President Bush's budget is the long-term deficit. He's punching a hole in, 2010, 2011. He wants to make a lot of these tax cuts permanent, when hopefully, if the right person is president, we won't have these kind of deficits. We won't have to worry about it. We'll have a healthy economy. We're not going to need, if the right person becomes president, we don't need to stimulate the economy in 2011. We need jobs today. We can worry about 2011 when we get to 2011, but we need jobs today. So we have to solve his long-term budget bind that he puts the government in after 2010. Right now, we need to concentrate on jobs. And there I have a little concern, because it appears that the Kerry camp wants to concentrate on the current deficit as opposed to the bigger issue raised by what President Bush is doing.
Well, Dr. William Spriggs, it's been a pleasure to have you with us. We'll have to bring you back much more frequently to the airwaves of WBAI. And if people want to find out more about the upcoming activities relevant to this, and I know there's a wonderful report in progress, new findings on recession and their impact on African-American unemployment, jobs, and income, where can people go?
Yes, our website is www.nul, for National Urban League, .org. And the middle column will have our latest reports.
Well, again, Dr. William Spriggs, Executive Director of the National Urban League Institute for Opportunity and Equality, we will have you back. It has been a pleasure, and thank you for spending some of your day today with us.
This has been a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special.
And how about a little bit of Joe Hill? And, of course, how could we not play Paul Robeson?
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead, says Joe, but
copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find your hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.